Hey, welcome to the Warriors HQ podcast. Dieter Kurtenbach here. Mark Medina in Memphis. You're in Memphis, right, Mark?
I am in Memphis. I'm not in the Bay Area, which is unfortunate, but someone's got to do it.
It's pitiful and miserable and raining here in the Bay Area. So maybe Memphis, this is the one time you actually want to be there compared to here. Weird weekend for the Warriors. They have a couple of games this week, Memphis and Minnesota. Mark is on that road trip right now, gets to Tennessee a little bit early. Cause I mean, anytime you can get an extra day in Memphis, you got to take it. Saturday blown out, Sunday come through and played a really rock solid game, against Detroit. But I think the thing we want to talk about here today, the bigger picture thing, is Kevin Durant. And this is something that we have talked about a lot on the show in recent weeks. And it has to do with flow, and it has to do with vibe. And it's all these sort of unquantifiable things that we discuss when it comes to the Golden State Warriors, because we know they're the best team in the NBA. So we have to kind of nitpick and find things that maybe don't match the full aesthetic ideal that we've come to know and expect from this team. And Kevin Durant fitting in with sort of the joy of a Steph Curry, Klay Thompson offense. On Saturday, it did not go well. Stephen Curry was out of the game. KD had to sort of carry the load. It didn't work out on Saturday night, and the Warriors just got absolutely steamrolled by the Mavericks. And then on Sunday, KD sort of takes a step back and decides to go full distributor and gets 11 assists, but only takes 6 shots. Neither of us, I'm certain, I haven't heard your side of this yet, Mark, but I'm certain neither of us are going to lambast Kevin Durant, because I thought he had an exceptional game on Sunday. But it was certainly different. It was certainly a change. And I'm interested as to your thoughts, and I want to discuss here a little bit what this means, if it means anything at all for the Golden State Warriors as we kind of come down to the home stretch of the regular season.
Yeah, I think it definitely means a lot, because when you're looking at the shots, 6 field goals is very low. I was looking at his total field goal attempts throughout his time with the Warriors, and there was one game where he only took 1 shot. And that was,
he got injured in that game. Yeah.
2 minutes in Washington because he had the left knee injury. So aside from that game, technically speaking, this is the lowest number of field goal attempts he has had in a game ever in a Golden State Warriors uniform when he's been fully healthy. And I think that's notable. And I think it's also notable that it was 11 assists. It was notable that this coincided with Steph Curry coming back. And it was also notable that it coincided with the day before Steph Curry was out of the game for rest purposes, and Kevin was shooting a high volume, and he only went 9-25. So I think, you know, in that small sample size, Kevin will be the first to admit it, he wanted to have a different approach, a different game. But I think you wonder, to what extent does this mean that Kevin dials it back? Because I think in an ideal world, you kind of have a happy medium. You don't have Kevin, you know, being a high volume, inefficient shooter. But you don't want Kevin Durant to only take 6 shots in a game in normal circumstances.
No, obviously he's such an efficient player, even when he has a high volume, that it seems ridiculous to waste that talent in a playmaking role. Waste is the wrong word there, but to sort of truncate his abilities and not let him have the ball as much as maybe he wants. He went 5 of 6 from the floor against the Pistons. I will note this, 2 things, that you failed to mention. I don't think this was deliberate, but it also coincides with one of the best Warriors shooting nights of the year. And in fact, one of the best Warriors shooting nights I've ever seen. They go 62% from the floor, 52% from beyond the arc. So that's notable. Kevin Durant decides, I'm going to start playing facilitator, and the Warriors have one of their greatest shooting nights I've ever seen. And the second thing, we did not have DeMarcus Cousins or Andre Iguodala. Is that right? Did Andre Iguodala play on Sunday? I don't even know.
He had a rest day because he's right. And Sean Livingston had a rest day against Dallas. So yeah, right. It's
got it.
You have DeMarcus, who is a guy who could have been in the post getting touches there. And then you lose Iguodala, who would have had more playmaking responsibilities, because that's what Iguodala does.
Yeah. So you do have that. So the rotations this weekend, we thought we had a good idea going into the weekend. Really nothing has changed because we haven't had an opportunity to really see the full squad in either game this weekend. So the rotations, sometimes there are going to be rotations, and I imagine that this is going to get set up when the Warriors do come back, and perhaps this is Wednesday against Memphis. There are going to be periods of time where Kevin Durant has to carry the offense by himself in many senses. And there will be isolation looks for him built into the system because Steph is not on the floor. And maybe Clay is used as more of a spot up shooter, or DeMarcus isn't there with him. And we just have to see how that goes. But over the last 3 years, we have seen periods of time in pretty much every Warriors game where it's Kevin, go get your shot because we're treading water, and you just having the ball and doing whatever the hell you want with it is as good of an offense as any other team could possibly ask for in the NBA. But on this team, it's sort of a secondary option. So I am interested to see if maybe that played in at all to the playmaking ability. But I want to note here real fast that I don't feel like it was a defiant thing. And you can speak to this better than I can. I recall Kobe Bryant at one point I don't know what the criticism was in the media. It's been so long, it's easy to forget. But I do remember the tone of it, which was basically Kobe's a ball hog. He's not passing enough. And then he went out and like didn't take a single shot in the first half. Do you recall that game at all?
Yeah, I mean, that was well before my time, but this was in the 27 right. NBA playoffs against the Phoenix Suns, where
did in the playoffs.
Second half of the elimination game, he took one shot, and there was a lot of commentary from not even media people, but Charles Barkley saying what he did was selfish, and they took that as a response to, hey, Kobe shoots too much, and then this is his commentary of look what I'm working with, along with the coded message to the front office that they should make some off-season changes.
Right.
I didn't cover that time because the time I covered Kobe was during the middle of the championship run, when he actually did have good teammates to play with. And then when he actually didn't have good teammates to play with toward the tail end of his career, but he had much to worry about because he was just trying to stay healthy. So I didn't really witness any of those games where you were wondering, is Kobe making a statement? But I know that for Kevin's part, I know there were some fans, at least on social media, and I don't know if that's ever the trusted source, but here we are in the times that we're in. But there was, I think, some commentary, not necessarily against Detroit, but in recent games, as Kevin saying out to move a point. I'm not a psychology major. God bless you if anyone can ever read Kevin Durant's mind, but I didn't get a sense of just how he was on the court, that he was trying to make a statement by any means.
Yeah. I watching the game, I thought it was extremely joyful. And the thing that came into my mind frequently watching it was something that you said, I think, on the last podcast, if not the one before that, which was Kevin has said time and time again, and almost a little begrudgedly, that everything goes around Steph and Clay. And that is the system. And it was here before he got here, and it will be here whatever decision he makes this summer. And it's a system that's won championships. It's a system that won 73 games. And when he was out for those two games against Houston and Oklahoma City, and we noted this at the time, the Warriors found a little bit of a mojo. And it had been a minute since we had seen something like that, especially with the verve and the flow. And when he came back, and Kevin comes back into the fold for the second game, two games of that road trip, he very much wanted to fit in with the good vibes. And that's just being a good teammate. That's being a smart basketball player. That's wanting to make sure that you don't derail anything that's good that's happening with your team. And he might have taken it to the next level against Detroit on Sunday. But again, I mean, it worked out so well. And I think that the only thing that you can take umbrage with is that it is kind of a waste of Kevin Durant's skill set, that you have a system so strong and so powerful and so effective that Kevin Durant, one of the greatest scorers in NBA history, almost benefits it more by just kind of playing as a facilitator. And there are going to be nights in the playoffs, certainly, and it might be a lot earlier than it was last year, where Kevin Durant just needs to take over. And we haven't seen one of those games in a while, but those games are coming probably in the regular season again, but certainly in the playoffs. When you play in that half court game every possession matters, especially in the fourth quarter. And there are a lot of times that you just need to give the ball to a guy and say, get a bucket. And there is few, if any, better in the NBA at doing that than Kevin Durant. He's 7 foot tall and he can knock down a shot from anywhere on the court. That's the guy you give the ball to. But the fact that he is so efforting to make the system flow and to play with the joy, I think should be viewed as a positive, because I've talked about this a bunch. There have been times when the gears have grinded, and we don't want to go into the psychoanalyzation, as you noted, but man, it did feel like there was conflict, whether that was imaginary and us trying to make a mountain out of a molehill, or if it was real and perhaps even underplayed. There was conflict. The styles do contrast at times. And going into the regular season, if Kevin is buying in and there is a clear delineation between the ISO, I'm going to have the ball on the block offense, and the Kevin fitting in, facing the basket and playing the five man joyful weave, that's a really, really good thing, because ultimately the system wasn't going to change for Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant has shown plenty of times before Sunday that he can fit in with the system, but he hadn't shown it very frequently this year. He's showing it in spades. His passing was so excellent. He is, I mean, we joke about how it's almost a waste of his skills, but what a brilliant passer he is. So incisive with the ball. And he's just like Steph, the gravity that he creates is immense. It's really exciting to sort of see that flourish. I would like to see, we saw the three kinds of smoke on Thursday against the Indiana Pacers, when you had DeMarcus Cousins in the bully ball on the block, you had Kevin Durant doing the ISO stuff in the mid range, and you had Steph and Clay doing their things on the outside. You had three levels of dominance going on. And I think that's probably the archetype for what we're going to see from the Warriors the rest of the season and in the playoffs particularly. But I'd be interested to see how Boogie fits in if Kevin is playing this sort of distributor role inside of the joyful system. If everybody buys into the one overarching joy, that would be really fun for me to watch. I don't know if it would work. I really don't. And that's not a comment on the players, and it's not a comment on the system. I just don't know. It's a lot of talent, and it's that could look a little messed up, but I'd like to sure see. It would be a fun experiment for the final few weeks of the season. Did you get the vibe last night at the game that Kevin has kind of released some tension here? He was very funny in his post-game press conference after Sunday night's game, and I thought that was a nice change. It's been pretty tense, and maybe the joy rubbed off a little bit into that as well. Or is that just me? And you know that it's kind of all been a weird act at the home press conferences, at least for the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's so hard to read Kevin day to day, but I think the two things regarding his game and how he measures, hey, when is it time to score? I think in his defense, when you look at his time this season with the Warriors mm-hmm. and last season, most notably in that West Conference Finals against the Rockets, right. He has mostly reverted to those high scoring nights when he's seen that the first option hasn't been working.
So absolutely. Great point.
For example, that bad 35 point loss to Dallas, which was the most lopsided defeat this season so far, he went 9-25. That was in the context of Steph Curry is out. There's one less really good shooter, a lot less space to work with. Let's see if I can knock it down. It didn't work. I think that there has been a lot of fair debate about what Kevin did in that West Finals, but there is no debate on how it started. Game one and game two, Steph and Clay did not shoot the ball well. Mike D'Antoni and the Rockets rightfully had the philosophy, you know what, of all the things that make the Warriors dangerous, if we're going to have to give something up, we'll give up Kevin Durant. And if he gets his points, God bless you. Well, he got his points the first two games. It worked out in game one. Rockets were able to still compensate in game two. And then it became, I think, Kevin's and frankly, the Warriors kind of go-to move where, hey, Kevin's got it going. Let's ride that hot hand. The problem was the Rockets made a lot of adjustments, especially with that switch heavy defense. And then it became a self-fulfilling prophecy where Kevin was getting too much at too inefficiency. And then his other teammates weren't able to be a threat. And, you know, thankfully for the Warriors, they were able to figure those things out later on. So yeah. I don't think that Kevin is a guy that feels like, hey, I got to get my numbers. No. I got to get my shots. He does. And I think most of it is for the better. He wants to be seen as an efficient scorer, not a high volume scorer. But I think where he gets frustrated is when the Warriors, not individually, but as a team, get too consumed of, we have to do this. I think when the Warriors are at their best is when they don't play to a script. And that can cut entirely in different ways. It's not even just, okay, take what the defense gives you and find the open man. I think the Warriors are most dangerous when they're not running set plays. Steve Kerr, for the most part, because of how talented his guys are, he wants them to just be able to react and do their thing. And then that's where it becomes the puzzle for Steph and KD and to, you know, some lesser extension, Clay and Draymond. Who is the best option on the floor? Is it Steph, even when he's double teamed, or is it Durant? And I think to all these guys, there is always a case to be made that maybe Steph is being too unselfish and statistically he should be shooting more shots. And you can say the same thing about Kevin, could say the same thing about Clay, probably not the same thing about Draymond because he's not a great shooter. But I think they sometimes overpass to their own detriment. And then they get stuck into, they have to do this by design. And then that takes away one of the key threats that makes the Warriors so good that you don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah. And that's sort of the gear grinding that I've referenced a few times. These are champagne problems, we should note. And you mentioned last year's Western Conference Finals, an astute point and really highlights, the issue in quotations that we're discussing, because it really isn't an issue overall. Let's not forget last year in the playoffs, the Warriors needed Kevin Durant from day one. Stephen Curry didn't play until the second round. And so much of that series against San Antonio and the first couple games against the Pelicans were just Kevin Durant doing work and playing sort of a throwback style of basketball. And so it wasn't ridiculous in the moment when the Rockets are daring Kevin Durant to beat him to just go back to it. You just won two series effectively through Kevin Durant beating other teams. And it ultimately created a bit of a challenge because of the Iguodala injury, because the Rockets were a worthy adversary. But then we saw again in the NBA finals, I mean, Kevin Durant just doing incredible Kevin Durant stuff. He is built for the playoffs. And the question for the Warriors going in is, how can they make sure that they don't have a full game or even large stretches of time to where they're trying to figure out their identity on the court? And I thought you hit the nail on the head. They do play better when it's extemporaneous basketball, when they're not running exact set plays. But at the same time, that can create some difficulty because If Kevin thinks he has the hot hand, or Clay thinks he has the hot hand, or Steph thinks he has the hot hand, they're all so unselfish. And at the same time, they all want to keep the hot hand going. And sometimes that can create some issues in terms of just wasting a possession, if you will, because you gotta feed this guy. With Boogie getting into the scenario, I think it just adds a level of complication that we don't know yet. It could add another level of success that we've yet to see, but it is going to be really interesting. Usually the last 2 years with this team, we've had a very clear understanding of what the rotations were and really what the lineups were. And even had the concept, okay, well, if David West can't play in this series, we know exactly what the Warriors are going to do in that scenario. And it wasn't very complicated. This year, it does seem as if the rotations have been increasingly complicated. And so while it's appreciated in many senses that Kevin is being the distributor, I just don't know if this is a long-term thing. And going back to the point, I mean, there are going to be likely, perhaps not, but likely there are going to be lineups that Steve Kerr goes to on a nightly basis when they have a full squad or when, you know, it's crunch time in the regular season or certainly in the playoffs that the entire goal is to make sure that Kevin Durant gets 6-7 possessions in a row on the block to knock down mid-range jumpers. And I presume that's still the case. I presume that's still the case. I don't think one game or a couple of games really changes that. This seems to me more just a Kevin getting back into the flow, the Warriors finding their groove a little bit. And what you mentioned earlier, sort of a, that didn't work, let's go the other way, and maybe finding the happy median over a period of time. Where do you fall on that?
Yeah, I got to steal a line from you that you've referenced about Draymond Green, where he often says the on point thing, and that you always take him for his word. And what his word is with this is, in the future, Kevin Durant, when it's money time, has to take more than 6 shots. But at the same time, in the broader view of field goal attempts and what that means, Draymond's main concern is he just needs Kevin Durant to be aggressive. And that applies to everyone. It's not about how many shots Steph Curry gets, Clay, DeMarcus, Draymond, KD. If they're all aggressive, all those things have a way of sorting themselves out. And I think I'm looking at the box score here. The Warriors win against the Pacers. None of the guys in the starting lineup had more than 20 field goal attempts. I think that's the first time with these four All-Stars, and certainly first time with Cousins because this is his first year, that none of them reached the 20-point attempt. That's probably asking too much because that's too much of a utopia.
Right.
But if they follow the philosophy of, you know what, like, let's – going back to what both you and I were saying before of, like, just – play off of that improvisation and playing off your instincts, but with the aggressiveness, all this takes care of itself. And, you know, the balance and how you do it, they won't really have to care because they'll be up by double digits anyway. It's amazing how, you know, being aggressive and then being dialed in defensively has a way of sorting those things out. That being said, as much as, you know, Kevin's going to probably get more than 6 shots in a playoff game, and they need to be aggressive and not worry about the distribution, I think it is a very distinguishable weapon that the Warriors should utilize, that they have 3 front court players that are very good playmakers.
Yes. With
Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins, Kevin Durant. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Dieter, but I really can't think of a front court combination in the league that has that kind of versatility. And am I missing something here?
No, it's preposterous. I think Denver with Millsap and Jokic is an incredibly creative front court, but the 1-2-3 punch when the Warriors are at their best with Cousins and Durant, if we're just looking at playmaking ability, not necessarily even scoring ability, just the ability to move the ball around and find passing lanes that not a lot of others can see, it is second to none. Though I do think Denver deserves consideration for that topic. Those are the only two teams that I can really see in that realm.
Yeah, and I'm looking at, you know, the rest of the West here. You're talking about the presumed, I wouldn't say threats, but the presumed other teams that could make things relatively interesting, challenging with the Rockets. I mean, this is a really great contrast. I think it ties into a column you had earlier in the week about the difference between Steph Curry and James Harden. But this is the difference between the Warriors and the Rockets, where everything falls on James Harden, even when you account for, hey, Chris Paul's a good player and Clint Capella. You have not only scoring threats, but playmaking threats. I think it just falls into that easy storyline that the Rockets will wind up wearing down in a playoff series, while the Warriors will just be very fresh and have so many different options that it's impossible for any kind of adjustment to sustain long-term in the playoff series. Oklahoma City, it's still Russell Westbrook trying to get triple doubles. Yes, Paul George is getting career high in, you know, a lot of statistical categories this year. Steven Adams is a good defensive matchup, but it's still Russell at the end of the day as far as making plays.
Couldn't agree with you more on that. Russell Westbrook will find a way to lose one or two games on his own. And I just don't think that when he plays his best games, he can will a team to a victory in the same way that maybe he could have a year or two ago. The book is out on him too much. He doesn't have enough moves. He doesn't have enough smoke to really make things interesting. When you look at going back to Durant, pretty much anything Kevin Durant decides he wants to do is probably going to work out a-okay for the Golden State Warriors. But if you are going to err, and err being the operative word here and probably the incorrect word, probably erring on the side of joy, erring on the side of egalitarianism, erring on the side of getting his teammates involved because he has such talented teammates, it is the way to go. And it is somewhat counterintuitive, I would imagine, because we do forget sometimes that Durant hasn't been here this whole time. And Steph and Clay and Draymond, this all happened with them. They were drafted by this team. They came up with this team. They had to deal with Mark Jackson together. They went through this entire journey. And Steve Kerr comes in and installs this system that is not necessarily different, but certainly had the potential to unlock a lot of things for those three players, as we later found out with Draymond. And certainly it was built for Steph and Clay. That's gonna be hard to break those habits, and they shouldn't be broken because clearly the success that's followed is immense and dynastic. So Durant trying to fit in with that is always going to be a challenge for him, especially then when you also take into account that he has had the ability to just score on whoever he wants his entire career. And so many of the teams that he has played on, including a teams with Russell Westbrook, the entire goal was to just get Kevin Durant the ball and let him do what he wanted as much as possible. And you can't hold it against the guy that sometimes those tendencies come back. The Warriors are such a stark, or were, now the rest of the NBA is copying it, but the Warriors were such a stark departure from sort of the norm of basketball in the post-Jordan era, that you can't, it's not as if Kevin Durant and everybody was studying it and it's just an easy switch over. So it does give the Warriors a second kind of smoke. The Cousins things gives them a third, and we still have to see how that meshes in. I just haven't seen enough. The lack of the full squad being on the court, it has been a challenge in that regard. I do think that we'll get some opportunity to see it here in the coming weeks, hopefully enough to where we can draw some semblance of a conclusion before the first round of the playoffs. But I find it hard to, I find the criticism of, listen, I have criticized Kevin Durant plenty. It is almost famous. But I find the criticism of his sort of shape-shifting game, he seems to not be able to win in this regard. When he's passing and he's having a spectacular passing game, he's criticized for not taking enough shots. And when he takes a lot of shots, and this is something that I get in, I go in on every now and again, because I err towards the side of joy personally from an aesthetic standpoint. When he's taking too many shots, it's now they need more joy. And that might just be the byproduct of being sort of late to the party. But I do feel for the guy a little bit, in the sense of it does not seem as if he can win, except for he can win championships. They've won two championships the last 2 years, so it hasn't been all that bad. But it does seem like an unfair standard that he's held to.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, at the end of the day, when you're playing specifically in the Detroit game with three other all-stars and Steph Curry, Steph Curry is back, but DeMarcus Cousins was sitting, but three other all-stars, and you are being a facilitator, I think it's a little bit of a stretch to say that he's doing this as a form of protest.
No. Anyone who's saying that is totally preposterous.
Right. The team are really good. Now, in Kobe's situation, it is clearly a sign of protest, because not only
those guys sucked,
but he's playing with Shmush Parker and think who else.
Are you telling me that Stephen Curry is not the second coming of Shmush Parker?
You know, give it some time and maybe you can go up to that. But, you know, you got to be patient here.
You got to respect the goats.
Exactly. But in Kevin's aspect, yeah, I think he is a damned if you do, damned if you don't. as far as how he's playing. I think he also doesn't do himself any service when sometimes he's been in a mood in post-game scrums and he leaves things open to interpretation, where sometimes it seems like he almost goes out of his way to disagree with what Steve Kerr said on, you know, kind of the analysis of that game and what you take away from. And, you know, there was a game a few weeks ago where Steve felt like they didn't have enough intensity and play with enough anger. And then Durant was saying facetiously, oh, I thought we'd move off of joy, where Kerr's philosophy and identity throughout his time coaching the Warriors has always been, yes, they want this culture of joy, good working environment that applies more to the offense. He wants an edge. He wants intensity. He wants passion, anger when it comes to defense. And I think where Kevin has been figuring out, like, there's no way around it. He has a different personality than Steph. But I think, to everyone's credit, like, I don't think Kevin, based off of talking to him, my own observations, I don't think that he rolls his eyes that Steph is this happy-go-lucky guy. But I think that he thinks that the narrative about him is a little bit overblown, where it's like he's coming into practice and just making everyone's lives feel better as if he's like this therapist. And it's more of, he creates a positive working environment, and Kevin appreciates that. And in his mind, what also creates a positive working environment is if you are a guy that puts in the work, you back up, you know, your stature with what you do as part of your day to day. And that's what Kevin does. And just because he's stoic about it doesn't necessarily mean that he's upset or anything. So, you know, like with anything, there's probably a little bit of a gray area when it comes to that. But as far as the joy aspect, he definitely appreciates what Steph brings to that. But I think, you know, sometimes he rolls his eyes a little bit of, as far as what that exactly means, because it's not like Steph every day, like, yeah, maybe he'll take some half court shots. Maybe he'll, you know, be a little bit of a jokester, but it's not his role necessarily to be this guy that's just lifting everyone's spirits up, you know, as if he's, you know, giving these inspirational messages to them.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before. I mean, Steph is not that guy. There was a moment not too long ago, which of course, in hindsight, seems preposterous because they always end up looking this way, where it felt like the Warriors were in sort of a mini crisis and that they didn't really have their heads on straight. And I don't recall, I mean, in the conversations that I was having around that time, it was mentioned that this might be an opportunity for Steph to give a rah-rah speech and to bring everybody together. But that's just not how he rolls. Steve Kerr has called him time and time again the Tiny Tim Duncan. I don't know if he's used that exact terminology, but I like the way that it sounds off the tongue. So the Tiny Tim Duncan. And I have actually kind of had I've had interesting conversations. I don't know if we've ever come to a conclusion off of them with Steve Kerr regarding leadership and what it is that makes this team tick. Certainly not to take away anything from Stephen Curry when it comes to his leadership, because he's a steady, constant presence. Lord knows he leads by an exceptional example. But I like to give Draymond Green a lot more credit than I think he really does get in perhaps the popular narrative when it comes to that leadership. Because if you're going to get a rah-rah speech, it's probably coming from Draymond Green. He's the rah-rah guy on this team. He's the heartbeat of this team. And so I can kind of empathize a little bit. I can understand where Kevin Durant's coming from if he does somewhat roll his eyes a little bit at the hoopla around Steph, which Steph neither confirms nor denies, does not pump it up, does not tone it down. This is the byproduct, of course, of saving a terrible franchise and doing it in such a exciting manner as Stephen Curry and the rest of the Warriors did over the last few years. There's no necessarily right way to lead a team. And I don't think there's a wrong way to lead a team as long as you are benevolent in your leadership. And all of these guys have actually, it's been astounding, I think, when we take a couple of steps back and think about how they've coexisted. Because certainly when Kevin Durant joined the Golden State Warriors 3 years ago, there was more than a few predictions that this wouldn't work out, that there was only one ball and that the personalities would clash. And we have found time and time again, even though we've had a huge blow up this season, a very public blow up, these guys really do like spending time with each other. And I think that more than anything else, they have a tremendous amount of respect for each other's skill sets. And I do think that we need to give Kevin some credit in this regard. if Kevin might, you know, it might ruffle his feathers a little bit that he'll never get the same love as Stephen Curry will. And it's understandable as to why, even though it's probably unfair, at least in the proportion that it is presented. But he would not have signed with the Golden State Warriors if there wasn't an immense amount of respect for what Stephen Curry did, not just for this team, but for the game overall. And that respect is not ubiquitous around the NBA. There are still people out there, not just in media jobs and kind of the old guard, who roll their eyes at Stephen Curry as, you know, the baby faced assassin. They think he's ruining the game. They hear the Mark Jackson thing and they, you know, they echo the call. And those are guys who are currently in the game right now. They think that he's not worth it all. They don't realize that he's a revolutionary out there. Kevin Durant understands exactly what Stephen Curry is. And he came in knowing that he would never be the man. And no matter what he does, and he's won two NBA Finals MVPs, he can never be the man here in Golden State, because it's always going to be Stephen Curry's team. Stephen Curry is synonymous with the Golden State Warriors now. And that's a tough break for Clay and Draymond and Kevin. But man, he had to buy in initially. And that buy-in, I think, does speak volumes to his character and his understanding of the game overall, because again, just not everybody fully understands what Stephen Curry means for the game of basketball. He'll be on the Mount Rushmore when it's all said and done. Kevin Durant might join him there, because Kevin Durant is perhaps not as revolutionary, but he's every bit as talented, if not even a little bit more so than a Stephen Curry. It is a preponderance of talent that this team has. It is kind of laughable to think about it. I guess it's aggravating for others. But man, I said it a little bit earlier. These are absolutely champagne problems, if they're problems at all. I mean, we're negotiating if Kevin Durant's skills are best used as an elite playmaker or an elite scorer. The balance is somewhere in the middle. I have a feeling it will be struck, but I loved watching him making plays the other night. I don't think that he does that enough, at least from somebody who just likes watching basketball, because, I'd just like to see him show the full repertoire more often if we could, because it's great to watch.
Yeah. And how about this for another encouraging sign, and how it relates to the joy and the working environment and what you mentioned about the flare up with Draymond and Durant, obviously that we know about in early November. I don't recall the specific play that led to this, but I did notice against the Pistons, there was a play defensively where afterwards, Draymond was getting on Kevin Durant before the inbound play started, and Draymond being Draymond didn't hold back. But this time Kevin Durant did not take exception to it, and it was fine. And then a few plays later, there was a defensive stop that was made, and then Draymond found Kevin for an open shot on the break, and all is well that ends well. And so who knows, you know, what the exact nature of the relationship is when it comes to how close they are and if it even matters and factors into his free agency decision, or what his free agency decision ultimately will be. But when we're talking about this season specifically, I think it's fair enough to say that the Warriors have prevented that incident in November from affecting what their, you know, mission will be specifically this season with winning another NBA championship. I mean,
I think you're 100% right. Yeah. How hilarious is that?
Yeah.
I mean, how ridiculous do we sound back then when we thought that this was the end of the world? Because it looked like the end of the world.
But you know what? In fairness to like you and your takes, I think you had established early on that, look, it's not about what this means this season. They will figure it out, and they can figure it out. It's more about next season. That still remains to be seen how that will play out. But I think there is also something to be said that, you know, they were able to right the ship. So at least it didn't affect everything that they have this season, because right now that's the only guarantee that, hey, they have five all-stars. The window is now to win. They are favored. Let the chips fall. And that's, you know, frankly, all they can really control at this point, because the offseason, it's going to be a whole variable of unknown, starting with Durant, Clay, yeah, DeMarcus, what other teams in the NBA do free agency, and then they'll have to go from there.
We'll go back to Draymond Green's wisdom, because it's always a good place to start and end. He's always right. damn it, he's always right.
And he will tell you he's always right.
It's appreciated. He said that it's about this year, and as you said, the chips will fall where they may, but it's about just this year. And perhaps it's not as fun, the fact that it feels very business-like at times, that these guys are just trying to get over the hump. And that was the case before the Durant Draymond blow up, which I guess we're still talking about it, so it can't be 100% in the rearview mirror. But it is interesting how much the tone has changed with this team year over year. This year almost feels like a chore, and I'm interested to see if that changes at all in the playoffs. And how, you know, I don't want to extrapolate it too far out, but what that ultimately means come the post playoff stretch, the summer, June or July 1. But it does feel, again, that this team has been able to compartmentalize a lot of nonsense and just lock down when they need to, when they're motivated to, in the big games. And be able to get that job done and to tap into that immense amount of talent that they have. But again, it's not as sexy. It's not as fun as it once was. And I think that's why it was so fun in many ways, despite the fact that it turned into somehow a controversy, to see a game like Thursday when everyone was hyper focused. I mean, Kevin Durant obviously dealing with an immense hardship in his life. He was playing with NBA levels final focus. He slammed the hell out of the scorer's table after a turnover at one point, to the point where I'm like, oh man, he could have broken his hand doing that. Obviously a lot of extra emotions in that contest, but a baseline effort level that him and all of his teammates had, and they just ran the Pacers off the court. A really good Pacers team. The same energy they had, they get embarrassed. They take their foot off the accelerator, as they have so many times before this season. Take the foot off the accelerator, lose in not that ridiculous circumstances when you take into effect the full context of Stephen Curry being out for Saturday's game. And they come back and just wallop. I thought that they handled the Pistons more than the final scoreline showed. Like so many other times, again, they sort of took their foot off the accelerator late in the game once it was in control and the Pistons made it look respectable for a minute. But when this team wants to, they can turn it on. And it doesn't matter if they actually like each other or not. It doesn't matter if everybody's fighting behind the scenes, which there's no indication that that's the case, but none of that matters. They're professionals and they know how to get the job done when it counts. The only question with this team is if they're going to get in their own way. And so far they've had ample opportunity and yet they haven't done it. And I don't think that we should bet on them to do so at any point between now and the final game of the NBA Finals in June.
Well said. It'll be fascinating to see how all those things play out, and specifically with Kevin, like what kind of games we're going to get, what kind of moods we're going to get. And you know what? It's unpredictable, but I know Dieter will have some answers in different stages. You know, mm-hmm. We got the website, the Mercury News, East Bay Times, where we'll have stories, your takes, my, latest info on Durant, and we'll be doing this podcast. So Warriors HQ. So I'm sure this is just one of many, you know, kind of deep dives we'll get into regarding Kevin Durant and kind of the state of things.
No, it's cool. We're not telling on ourselves at all. And I'm sure it's better than whatever you had planned in Memphis tonight.
No plans.
You got a movie? You got a movie on deck? You got something?
I'll be honest. I took a very early flight here, and last few days hasn't been a lot of sleep. So today is, I'm kind of following the Warriors path of taking a rest day and to make sure that I'm recharged for the next few days to come. And you know, it's paid off for the Warriors. I'm sure it'll pay off for me.
Just the professional, professional on the road. I am cowering at the thought of going on the road here pretty soon for the playoffs. I suck on the road. The content perhaps better, but personally, I fall apart on the road. I need my safe spaces. Very millennial, very snowflake. So I don't know. I'm just hoping that we don't have to go to the Central Time Zone. I'm going to keep hammering it. If anybody out there with the Warriors is listening, I've told you this in person probably. Make sure we stay in the Pacific Time Zone. You can't just do it for me, everybody, and do it for Mark Medina, because Lord knows he's put in enough miles this year. He doesn't need to add a couple thousand more for the postseason. You guys get to enjoy it all on TV. We got to be out there doing the grind work. We can call it work. It's the best job in the world, but we have to go out there and still put in the grind every now and again. Mark, what do we still have the Clay deal going, right?
I think it's still the Clay deal going on. Yeah. It's 11 cents a day for 11 months. If you subscribe to both the East Bay Times or the Mercury News website, and there's always so much stuff going on. I mean, not only are you getting Warriors coverage, you're getting Bears, sports coverage, local news. So pretty good way to spend 11 cents a day. So you got to go to the website and hit the subscribe button there for it.
Clay just tweeted it out. Clay just said, hey, you know, Clay offer's still going on, and he's enjoying the East Bay Times in his house. I'm sure he enjoyed my latest column, Your Latest Dispatch, and all of the great Bay Area news group reporting in the sports section and the Pulitzer Prize winning reporting in the front section. You know, the real good stuff, the stuff that you actually need to know. All of this other stuff is just a ball game. Mark, have a good night's sleep. You've earned it. We will talk certainly tomorrow around Warriors practice. And I know you got some good stuff coming for us from the road later this week. I'm looking forward to it. I think you're riding solo for the next couple pods. I'm out of town. I'm trying to get recharged so that I don't have such a malaise before the playoffs start. I need to be fresh too.
All right. Well, that's what the Warriors are doing. That's what we're doing. But, you know, we'll keep things plugging along, and you know, whether it involves me taking a few more shots or making a few more passes, I will try to follow Kevin Durant's lead.
Anything, just like Kevin Durant, anything you do, Mark, is going to work out well for the team. All right, buddy. Talk soon.
All right. Likewise.